James Wallman, a trend forecaster for clients like BMW, Nike, and IKEA, believes stuffocation is the most pressing problem of the 21st century. In 1991, the average American bought 34 items of clothing, and we're now buying 64 items every year. That's something new every 5 days or so. We have more stuff than we could ever need, and it isn't making us happier. In fact, new research proves it could be hazardous to our health. James Wallman's new book is Stuffocation: Why We've Had Enough of Stuff and Need Experience More Than Ever. The book is published by Spiegel & Graw, and it's a great pleasure to welcome James Wallman to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. Very nice to have you aboard.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me on the show today. It sounds like stuffocation seems to really resonate with people.
It certainly does. And why do you think that is? I mean, we've reached the point where we're acquiring too much stuff, and perhaps we're reaching the point where we realize that now.
I think we're reaching this point, and we can publish a book called Stuffocation. Instead of people thinking, wow, that's a silly word, they think, wow, that's a silly word, but it kind of describes how I feel. The number of people who've contacted me on Facebook and Twitter and sent me emails and people I just talk to and say, wow, that word really expresses how I feel. And I think the reason that we feel this way, Joe, so many of us feel stuffocation, is that truth be told, it's the success of the system we live in. Materialistic consumerism has done so well. It's been so good for us. It's transformed standards of living for us. And the thing is, it's worked so well because we've embraced it. We've all been very good consumers. We've worked hard. We've spent well. And the thing is, we've been brought up to do that, but we've not been brought up to manage the amount of stuff we have in our homes. And I don't, in all fairness to the people that designed this system, they never thought we'd get to the point where we were buying that many pairs of shoes, that many, you know, name the product that you want. We buy so much stuff today that we're really good at buying it, but we're not as good at managing it as we are at buying it. And that's why so many of us feel stuffocation today.
When it comes to the actual stuff, it can take many different forms, right? I mean, we can feel stuffocation by just looking at the inboxes in our email.
That is so true. Ultimately, stuffocation, it's a mental problem. I mean, some people will have 30 pairs of shoes and feel really good. And some people have 2 pairs of shoes and feel good. And I'm probably, to be honest, I'm thinking about my wife and me. You know, I'm really happy with the 2 pairs of shoes I have. I have a pair of shoes I wear all the time.
Right.
I have a pair of shoes that have no mud on, so when I have to go to a meeting and look smart and, you know, serious. But my wife, there is no way my wife would get through the week with 2 pairs of shoes. That's not, you know, she would like to have more pairs of shoes, definitely, than 2. I think 30 would probably just about keep her happy, but we're in discussions about that. It's not the amount of stuff we have, it's how it makes us feel. And so the amount of the emails that we have in our inbox also can make us feel really kind of overwhelmed. And I think that's how it is for the things in our homes as well.
So when it comes to that stuff in our homes, I mean, it is up to us. Email aside, where it can accumulate and it's beyond our control, the stuff that we buy is completely up to us. So where did our trigger sort of start to go haywire, where we could say, okay, we've reached a point where this is too much?
I don't know if you have any stuff in storage, Joe. And just to be really clear, I'm certainly not going to point the finger if you do. A lot of people do. The storage industry, which started back in the 60s, I think it was, is huge. I think if you're at the point where you've got so much stuff you can't keep it in your own home, if you're at the point where you've got so much stuff that you're keeping loads of stuff in the garage and there's no room to keep your cars in there, which is what garages were designed for, if you've got a kind of sense of when, you know, you open your wardrobe and it's full of clothes to wear, but there's nothing you actually want to put on that day, or you find yourself rooting through your closets or your cupboards for the one thing that you really want to use at that moment, but it's just full of stuff that you really don't need. I think that's what it's about. I think it's that sense of feeling overwhelmed, feeling suffocated by this stuff. So instead of it making us happier, which is what stuff is supposed to do. If you think about it, you know, when you first get a car, I mean, a car can take you to another town very quickly, which means you can go see your friends, you can go do something, you can go bowling, you can go to the theatre, or if you've got a bicycle, it means you can go fast to go do something. You know, if you have a laptop or a book or a pair of shoes, it can really, you know, it can facilitate your life. It brings us experiences. I think that's the key thing. But if the stuff in your life, instead of making us happy, is making you stressed in some way, that's when you really know you're at a point of suffocation.
You gave a very broad definition, deservedly so, of that, because while I don't have things in storage, I think what you just described of opening up a closet and saying, all right, there's too many clothes in here that I need and I don't really have what I want, but I may need it someday, James, and that's the problem, right?
That is exactly the problem. And, you know, this led me, this discovery of this idea of that we might need that one day, it led me to write a passage in the book called The Secret Hoarder in Every One of Us. And just to be really clear, I have this in me. I actually was clearing out my garden at the weekend, and I've got loads of, sounds ridiculous, but branches from a hedge that I cut down. And I was keeping these branches because I thought one day I might make something from it. And I realized that actually I'm not going to make anything with it. I'm not that kind of guy. That stuff's going to go. I'm going to get rid of it. And the reason I wrote this section about this secret hoarder in every one of us, Joe, is that, you know, those hoarding shows on the TV, you know, hoarders, etc. I mean, there's just loads of them. And,
yeah.
And I think one of the reasons why so many of us watch them is because they resonate with us. And the reason I say that is from all the research I did, one of the things I came across was that hoarders face, there are three issues they have. One is too many things coming in. Two is too little stuff going out. And three is an inability to categorize and prioritize and make important decisions about that stuff. And the it might come in handy is an exact thing that hoarders say. And the only difference between someone with real hoarding issues, you know, a hoarder who could be on one of those shows, and Joe, you and I, and probably a lot of the people listening to the show, is it's not a material difference between us and hoarders, it's a question of degree. So whereas some people would say, oh, that might come in handy to pretty much everything, some of us say that might come in handy to fewer things. And happily, most of us are able, once we come across something that we said that might come in handy for the past, I don't know, year or so, we look at it and think, oh, you know, I'm really not going to do anything with that. It's time to let go. And just to be really clear as well, that, you know, if you look back a generation or two, we came from a real time of scarcity. So our parents and our grandparents come from a time when, you know, if you were lucky enough to have stuff, you held on to it and you looked after it and you cherished it. But we now exist in a time when stuff has become much cheaper. We've become richer as a society, and therefore, getting new stuff has become just easier and quicker than reworking and mending and reusing all the stuff that we used to have. So it's very reasonable to think that might come in handy. But I think that we're at a point where we need to be a little bit tough with ourselves, because all that stuff that we think might come in handy has ended up clogging up our homes, giving us this problem of suffocation, you see.
The comedian Jerry Seinfeld had a great line many years ago where he would say the great part about being adult is if you want a cookie, you can have a cookie. Mm-hmm. You don't have to ask mom and dad if you can have a cookie. And it's as if we have now said, oh, okay, well, we're adults, we can get whatever we want, and we get whatever we want.
Yeah, that's I absolutely agree. It's one of the magical things about being an adult. And I think you're right about we've got to this point and we see things like, I would like that. Why not have that? There's a guy called George Carling, another comedian, who
yes.
I think almost has the response to that. This is from a skit that he produced actually in the 80s, where he talked about stuff. It's really worth looking this up. It's on YouTube.
Yeah, Place
Madness
for My Stuff.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and I love the way he says that one of the biggest problems we have is when we go on holiday because we can't take all our stuff with us. But then I think he talks about when he goes to Hawaii and then a friend invites you over to their hotel or something for the weekend. When you're there, he says, oh, my God, that's the worst problem ever, because you go from not having all your stuff to having to take some of the stuff that's already some of your stuff. And it just becomes very stressful for us. I think the solution, and I think this is one of the reasons why I'm not anti-stuff. I'm anti too much stuff. I really believe in the things that bring joy to our lives. I have two bicycles, one for going fast when I need to go to a meeting or, you know, get somewhere quickly. And I have one that has a seat on the back for carrying my little three-year-old around when we go to swimming class or something. So, you know, stuff is good. I think the solution is not to have as little of stuff as possible. But even solving the problem of having too much stuff isn't exactly the solution. The solution is to shift our allegiance from stuff to experiences and to realize that the best place to find happiness and identity and status and meaning isn't in more stuff, but it's in experiences instead. And to kind of take Jerry Seinfeld's point, the magic of being an adult is you don't need to say to your parents, hey, I want to go to Florida on holiday, or hey, I want to go to this place tonight. You can take yourself there now, and that will give you more happiness and status.
James Wallman is the author of the book Stuffication, Why We've Had Enough of Stuff and Need Experience More Than Ever. So let us explore that idea of experience. You talk in the book, and this is really when you had me in the book, because you make the point rather early that you can get rid of all of your stuff and still be a miserable human being. It's not a guarantee that it's going to make you feel great. So where does that idea of experience come in, and your definition of what that means?
That is a very good question. And where that comes from is a couple of different places. Firstly, I came at the book as a cultural analyst and a trend forecaster, and I've been doing that for just over a decade, helping companies like Nike and Louis Vuitton and Zurich Financial work out what the future is going to be. And I believe that I've seen the signs that suggest that we're moving from materialism to what I call experientialism. And the book originally, when I first put it together, Joe, was just a forecast. This is what I think is going to happen. I think we're going to stop being so materialistic. We'll stop looking for happiness and identity and status and meaning in stuff, in material goods. And instead, we'll find happiness and identity and status and meaning in experiences instead. And that's based on a number of signs that I've seen. Firstly, there's some research by a political scientist called Ron Engelhardt at the University of Michigan, who back in 69 had this hunch that the world was changing. And he's discovered that essentially the research has continued now for about 45 years. And in 1970, when he first conducted the research, 80% of people were materialistic. And now it's 50%. So in the long term, our society is becoming less materialistic. And our attitudes are changing. And there is also some really interesting evidence that shows that our behavior is changing as well. There's a guy that used to teach economics at Harvard, and he worked for the company McKinsey. He's now an environmental analyst. And he studied something called the MFA, the Material Flows Analysis, which looks about the amount of stuff going around an economy. And he's found, now this is for the UK, it's worth pointing out, but he's found in the UK since 2003, so a long time before the Great Recession, we're at a point where we've been consuming less water, paper, concrete, cars, and fertilizer. So we've been consuming less stuff. He says we've reached and we've passed the point of peak stuff. Now, that's for the UK, but he's also seen the signs of that happening in other countries like Sweden, France, and the US as well. So there's real evidence that suggests that we're shifting to becoming more experientialist. And thirdly, there's social media. And if you think about social media, Joe, it really has changed so much about the world. One of the things that it's changed is how we get status. Back in the 80s or the 90s, nobody knew that you'd been to TED or South by Southwest or New York, or you'd been skiing in Utah, apart from when you went up to them and told them about it. But now, with all your friends on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or LinkedIn, they know what you've been up to. And that means the way that we express our identities and we tell other people who we are and we express our status has become much more important. So now it's not really about what you have. It's what you do that's important for status. So these are just, when I came across those three, there's more in the book, of course, but those three things really, for me, propelled me to believe that we're moving towards experiences in the future.
And that is changing behavior. And as you point out in the book, certainly one of the big obstacles is changing your behavior. Another obstacle that you mentioned, which is really important and something that I would think would be a concern, is that you get rid of all the stuff, and then as George Carlin does point out in that routine, great, you have more room for more stuff.
You know, that is such a good point. And I think that I think so many people, when they do the clear out, you know, they follow my book or someone else's book, and they tidy up and they clear up and they make it all really neat in their homes. And they think, wow, haven't I been good? And how do we reward ourselves? Retail therapy. You know, we go out right. and we think, I've been really good. Look at that. Look at that space in my wardrobe. Or look at that space on the shelf, or all this room in my closets that I didn't think I had. And we go out and buy more stuff. And I think that's why I think it's really important that you mentioned behavior change, which is, of course, hard. That's why it's important not just to get on top of the clutter and to manage our stuff, but it's to shift our relationship with stuff and to realize that the best place to find happiness isn't going to be in more stuff. It's going to be in experiences. And the reason I can say that with conviction and with truth is because of some fantastic research conducted by two psychologists in the States, a guy called Tom Gilovich at Cornell University and a guy called Lee Van Boven, who proved in 2003 for the first time that material goods are, experiences are more likely than material goods to lead to happiness. And that is brilliant information, because once you know that information, once you know it's been scientifically proven, you know, the next time you're faced with a decision, you know, should I go shopping and buy something today? Should I, you know, do some retail therapy? Or should I do some, let's call it adventure therapy, experiential therapy? So should I go shopping and go some more buy some more stuff to put in my closet or put on my shelf? Or should I go play golf? Should I go cycling with a friend? Should I go for a walk? Should I go swimming with my kids? Doesn't matter what it is. Should I do something rather than go out and have something? And that's, I think with that information, it suddenly kind of propels you to make better decisions, to live a better life for yourself and your kids, but also you live a happier time as well.
Let's talk about those kids for a second. You imagine a world where those children will go downstairs on Christmas morning and see fewer presents under the tree, or celebrate their birthday with fewer presents around the cake, and that'll be okay.
That is such a great question. It's something I've been, to be honest with you, struggling in my household, because for a start, there are the grandparents that still buy stuff.
Sure.
And I feel a bit like a mean dad, you know, which is not a great way for any dad to feel.
Well you know, they're sweet little children, but they still have the capacity to flip you off.
Hey, I want to be nice about my kids, but yeah, they sure do. Hey, and I remember as a kid, I mean, the magic of the Star Wars toys, for instance, that, you know, I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, and my parents bought my brother and I stuff. You know, we got BMX bikes and Star Wars toys and Lego toys, and that was exciting. And I think we will change. Just to be really clear, I can see that, you know, our Christmas tree this year, I'll be honest with you, Joe, looked a little bare, and I did feel like a mean dad. But then we're doing things with our kids instead. And I can, you know, if you think about the joy that your child gets when you see the look on their face when they do something fun, that's so much more than seeing their enjoyment of all those toys. You know, with that Christmas morning when they rip open the box and they open the other one and the next one and the next one and the next one, they don't know who it's from. And they get confused by all those toys. Just to be really clear, I am not anti-toys at all. My little girl loves dinosaurs. So we got her, we only got her one dinosaur, but one of her grandparents got her another dinosaur and another one did as well. So she got some dinosaurs over Christmas. But we take her to the Natural History Museum, which is London, there's, you know, it's this great museum with all these dinosaurs.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Now, she does have fun with these plastic toys at home with these dinosaurs, but the look on her face when we take her to go see the dinosaurs, and, you know, when she sees this T-Rex kind of roaring at her, and she has a dinosaur movie as well that she really likes. Another example is, she really likes the film Finding Nemo. And, of course, I don't know if you've seen it, Joe. Have you seen the
movie?
Sure,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a great movie, right?
It is.
I mean, who doesn't like Finding Nemo? And, of course, Finding Nemo potentially comes with a lot of toys. You know, it's a Disney franchise.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure they're very good. She doesn't have a single Finding Nemo toy. And she doesn't lack for anything. I mean, you know, she has toys to play with in the bath. But we go to the London Aquarium. So we go and look at fish, and she has books about fish. I mean, she has the movie. So we engage with the idea. We just make sure we do stuff. So even if she gets a toy, and she got the Finding Nemo DVD for Christmas, we make sure that product is associated with an experience, not with a thing, of course.
And through that experience, then you can do more, and it becomes something that isn't just a gift for that day, but something that they can look forward to down the road as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why experience are better than material goods at making us happy. And this is something that psychologists have found. There are 7 key reasons that psychologists have found since that watershed moment in 2003. They've been trying to work out why experiences are better than material goods. You've hit the nail on the head for one of them. The great thing about an experience, which could be a day at the museum, it could be going to a theater, it could be a day at the beach, it could be going for a ski holiday, it could be all sorts of things, but it's time. And that is, it's irreplaceable, but also you get to enjoy it afterwards. You know, we still talk about, we go to the Natural History Museum probably once a month, and we talk about it a lot. It's not just a thing that comes and goes and it's done. It stays with us. And the other thing is that each of those experiences build on the previous one in a really kind of positive way. So it's not like if you get a dinosaur toy and then you get another dinosaur toy and another dinosaur toy, and you get to the point where they matter less and less. Whereas if you go to, you go to your favorite museum and then you go again and you go again, you get to know more about it and it becomes a more involved, more exciting experience. So experiences just build and build. And also at the same time, you're teaching your child a very important lesson that experiences do matter more than things.
And you make this point, but I think it's interesting to tap into your experience as a trends forecaster, that you can still spend money if you go through Netflix or Spotify or even use Zipcar. You're spending money, but you have the experience. You will have seen the movie, you will have heard the song, but you don't have the stuff.
Yeah, you've picked up on a really important point. That's being called, of course, the sharing economy. And the magic of the sharing economy, as Joel Stein wrote about in Time magazine a few weeks back, he said the sharing economy is the experience economy. And I believe the experience economy is the business world's manifestation of this idea of experientialism, where we get to have all the fun of having something without the downsides of actual physical ownership. Because the problems with owning a thing is you have to clean it, you've got to maintain it, you have to, if it's a toy, you've got to step around it, you have to insure it. There's a lot of baggage, if you like, that comes with owning something. And the magic of today's technology is that we're in a position where you can get all the joy of ownership without the downside. So it's I think we're living in a really lucky time where we can see capitalism evolve from based on material goods to much more based on the experiences that they can give us.
Well, it's a very provocative and a conversation-provoking book. Really fascinating stuff. The book is Stuffication, Why We've Had Enough of Stuff and Need Experience More Than Ever. The book is by James Wallman. It is published by Spiegel & Graw. James, thank you very much for joining us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Joe, thanks for having me. Some great questions, some really interesting conversation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, the name of the book is Stuffication by James Wallman. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.